You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Radio Tacoma, 101.9 FM, and you're listening to Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore. I'm very happy today to have with me Lynn Kopelke of Enumclaw, for want of a named place that he abides by. But Lynn is an award-winning Western artist, and an award-losing, he says, cowboy poet. There is a great deal of wit in cowboy poetry. I know that.
There is, and it is a genuine tradition that I have embraced, although, to be honest with you, you know the old axiom, all comedians want to play Hamlet, right? So I have more than one or two serious poems as well.
Of course you would. The high moral is sometimes part of cowboy poetry.
Philosophical. I suppose, yeah.
The virtue of living a clean enough life that you do nobody ill and things like that.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first do no harm.
To your mule or the other mules.
Or, yeah, exactly. To yours or anybody else's. Which is, I think, one of the reasons that isolation is such a popular theme in cowboy poetry. It makes it a lot easier not to hurt anybody if you're not around anybody.
Right. That's right. And you are caregiving as far as the watcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the life. But you didn't ever live it, did you?
I was a recreational cowboy briefly back in the mid-1980s. When you only do it that little, you can't really claim it. It's not a day-to-day, year-to-year struggle that the people that genuinely have the name have earned.
Right.
But, you know, to go out every a few weekends a spring and then a few in the fall and help out at a friend's ranch, it's not easy, but it's not hard either, because you know you won't have to do it in a week or two. Yeah. And you can come back to the relative comfort, the job security of not having to do it and to make a living.
Yes.
Raising beef for money, it's a pretty dicey proposition.
Right.
You know, the price hikes don't get down to the ranchers.
And where to find the water.
And then there is the weather.
Yeah. And I have a place in Idaho, and I met there some real professional cowboys. Mm-hmm. A man who was also a rodeo bronco rider who injured himself so badly in his old age, he really suffered because of his injuries from the being bucked off. And this guy was a really interesting old guy. We invited him often to have some food with us. He drank so much in his life, to drinking it from the bottle, a bottle a day, more than a bottle a day, he say. And to be out there thirsty and drink a bottle a day.
Yeah.
It makes you think, oh, how could I stand that? How could I live? How could I see?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But he was quite the storyteller, too. He wrote usually a July the 4th poem for the town newspaper.
Sweet.
Yeah. So he was trying his best to live the cowboy life, and did. And then lived in a trailer park, and was regaled by a lot of people. People buy him a cup of coffee, buy him a breakfast if they saw him in the restaurant, and that, because he was such an interesting, iconic figure of the town. And he still worked. He went off and did barbed wire fences for people, even though he had to hobble a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, when you're out there, did you take sandwiches or what did you do? He says, Oh, I used to take some of those Vienna sausages in the can, place them on the dash, let them warm up. Maybe a can of beans, small can of beans, and I have them for lunch, and they're warm.
Oh my. What part of Idaho?
Cascade, Idaho, the western central, just above Boise.
Okay.
Right by a huge lake, 40 miles south of McCall.
Oh, okay. My Idaho ties are a bit farther south than that, toward down towards Twin Falls.
Yes.
And a little town called Shoshone.
Oh, yes. And a windy road to go down that way. Mm-hmm. Often I've come up from Utah, mm-hmm. where the wind can blast.
Yes.
I mean, 40, 50 miles an hour on a nice day is nothing. So, you know, yeah, life is interesting out in the desert there.
It is. It's a fascinating bit of country, mm-hmm. the high desert.
Do you remember the guy Baxter Black?
Yes.
Baxter Black, in the write-up in the Wikipedia says,
my Baxter Black story.
Okay.
The first time I met Baxter Black was at a show in Ellensburg. I had the VIP ticket, so I got to meet the entertainment prior to the show. And Baxter walked into the room, and he started saying hello to people. He walked over to me, and he says, "Sir, have we met?" And I shook his hand, and I said, "No, sir, we have not." And he went, "Ah, that's why you don't look familiar." And I watched him, and he went on to give everybody in the room exactly what they needed.
Nice
as a celebrity.
Nice guy.
Very, very personable. He worked really hard at that end of it. Second time I met him was in Wenatchee prior to a show. He's standing there talking to the wife of the other entertainer of the show, whom I know. And walked up, and Melissa says, "Lynn, have you met Baxter?" And I said, "Well, yes, we have met once." He reached out his hand and looked at me and went, "Ellensburg, right?" I'm like, whoa, okay. Melissa probably told him where we'd met before. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Or we're in the same state, so having met me before was probably an easy enough jump for him. I don't care. He appeared to remember me, for my sake. Not,
that's an art, yeah.
You know, and the work he put in offstage with his fans was at least as impressive as his onstage persona. He was he was quite a guy, quite
yes,
a nice guy.
I enjoyed years of his show and the NPR
yes.
morning with Bob Woodward.
Okay.
On NPR morning show.
Yeah.
We had a regular sort of Friday, 15 minutes. Great for ending the show on Friday morning. Getting up.
Yep.
Yeah. So Baxter Black, yeah. Of course, why he comes up is kind of interesting. I mean, I'm sure there are many famous cowboy poets in the 20th century. There must have been many, many famous ones. One or two who probably had gone to the poetry contests, you know, because there's so many of those, aren't there? There are festivals and places for cowboy poetry to be.
There are, they're in a downturn at the moment.
Oh.
There are not as many as there were 10 years ago. The big one in Elko has continued after COVID. Mm-hmm. It has returned strongly. And even some of the larger ones, like the Monterey Gathering, has gone by the wayside. The Ellensburg Spirit of the West Gathering is officially no more. It did not survive the pandemic. And it was a highly regarded festival. Santa Clarita is still struggling along. They are dropping by the wayside. It's a cycle. They'll be back. It strikes me we have a stronger young contingent than we've had in several years. So hopefully some of the quote-unquote kids and kids, teenagers, just barely adults, will stick with it and therefore
they'll
be able
mature.
To rejuvenate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The old guard is dropping off. We lost Baxter last year,
right.
Along with more than one other pillars of the Western entertainment community. And like I said, though, it strikes me that the youngsters are as numerous now as I've seen them this century. So hopefully, there will be in the next few years, and a regeneration. It's cyclical, I suppose.
Well, let's hope so. We need the humor and the mirth. That we need the wit of this kind of poetry, just because we go through periods like the plague years.
Yes.
And this is the very kind of poetry that many would have wished for on a daily basis, just to keep their balance. We're going out of season, and we can enjoy this because, well, we're not all cowboys anyway.
Bear with me, folks. This is my longest poem. It's about 5 minutes long, and that presents a problem because my attention span is only 2.5 minutes. So we'll see if we can hold on to this one, see if I can remember all of this one. It's called Dutchie. Old Dutchie's hands weren't never still. When the day's work was over and done, his folding knife a work until some hunk of wood turned something fun. Maybe a horse or a bear, or maybe a toy soldier with a gun. Then it up and disappeared. None knew what happened to him when done. Now Dutchie, he was a middling hand. At most tasks given, he did just fine. But he's far from the best in the land. In wintertime, oft found him riding grubline. Most times that weren't too rough. Good folks trade work for food and a room. This year things been awful tough, and not much to spare midst winter's gloom. 2 days before Christmas Day, near full dark before he saw the light, relieved as he made his way with hopes of shelter for the night, he comes to what seems a front door. Frozen fingers make a fist, then knock. He's shivering cold right down to the core, and he hears someone lift the inside lock. Just sitting down to dinner. Heads bowed for prayers of thanks all around, children too young for sinners, and 3 startled nuns at that rapping sound. Now charity's God's own law, and the youngest one opens up the door, sees Dutchie needing a thaw, says, "There's always room here for one more. For your horse, the barn's out back, plenty of hay, tight against the wind. Coffee's on, hot and black. Come on in and make some new friends." Now old Brownie, just in heaven, staying under a roof for the night and seeing how they've been living, Dutchie loud, he just might be right. He met the children, one and all, smiling faces all shiny and new. Now their names he'd never recall, so Nino and Nina would have to do. Mother Margaret, she's in charge. Helped out by the 2 younger nuns, dozen orphans, small to large, means there's always something more to be done. Sister Inez made dinner, and that explains the green chili pepper. Ain't leaving here no thinner, Dutchie figured, after that supper. The novice, she's a hand for fare. By name, Wilhelmina von Schill. Now that moniker'd curl your hair, so Dutchie just dubs her Sister Bill. 2 days spent gathering firewood. He'd cut, old Brown pulled the sled. Might have done his soul some good. Hope to keep orphans warm in their beds. Christmas Eve, Vespers said, no mention of presents or Santa Claus. Carols sung and St. Luke read, but that one omission, why, it gave Dutchie pause. Christmas Day, and Sister Bill was up doing chores for first light. Saw his pallet there, empty and still. Seems Dutchie'd up and left in the night. But that's when she saw the manger scene. Mary, Joseph, wise men, camels and all. Shepherds with a lamb between and baby Jesus in his manger stall. All carved from different wood. So lifelike they took your breath away. Who'd have thought a cowhand could create such beauty there to display? And then she saw the canvas sack. And she dared to hope for what's inside. Just a bulging front, sides, and back. Her excitement she could no longer hide. Shouting like a Protestant, she awoke the house, every lad and lass, knowing that a heaven-sent miracle had just now come to pass. The children all gathered round. Some knowing for the first time that joy as the sack spilled out on the ground its precious gift of Christmas toys. There were horses. There were bears. There were toy soldiers with their guns. There was dragons and knights and maidens fair, a special gift there for everyone. For 50 years, that sack held out. See, it was kind of like them loaves and fishes. No child there need ever doubt the fulfillment of their Christmas wishes. And to this day, a prayer is still said for a man whose hands weren't never still at the side of a humble convent bed by an old nun they call Sister Bill. That's Dutchy.
Excellent poem. We're going to have that one for the Christmas anthology, Steve. Nice.
Thank you. Save that one.
But we're going to be able to enjoy that in summer. We're still enjoying the warm weather, but you've sort of decommercialized the Christmas, which of course is the way to go for it to have that sentiment, that feeling of the authenticity.
That's an interesting one. It took me quite a while to write. It is one of the techniques I used to use back when I was able to write. I am having some serious problems the last few years with that, but was the visual prompt. This is something that online a number of different sources will do. Poetry organizations or poetry pages, just loose conglomerations of poets, will prompt each other with pictures. And we'll say, okay, this week, everybody on this Facebook page, you write a poem about this picture. And it's just an exercise, right? This came from Frederick Remington painting. Mm-hmm. And it was a prompt from the, as I mentioned before, the now defunct cowboypoetry.com. And I didn't finish the poem until well after Valentine's Day. So it never got published because I didn't finish it in time on that site. But it is, I think it was worth the fight through it, the slog. It's one of my favorites of mine.
Right. You didn't rush it. I mean, for the deadline of the commercial vogue of...
There are no prizes involved, so I didn't feel obligated to have to get it done.
At the same time, what you're saying is how poetry doesn't come in season. You finish it out of season, right?
Yeah.
Think of making movies. They make them 2 or 3 years ahead of time, and you don't see them, and you think... This is now? No, it's not now. This is already history.
And like you say, when you're sitting there and you're watching a movie and there are people running around in the desert in the heat, and you realize they filmed this in February at 8,000 feet, they're freezing to death. Right. Or vice versa. Mm-hmm. They're all bundled up in their parkas and it's August in Death Valley, and it's like, it's crazy.
Well, that's choosing... works of poetry or works of art, looking at literature or, as you did, from pictures, given an image to... there's a kind of poetry that's named for that very sort of transformation from one art form into mm-hmm. another. And I do know what it is, but it's too sesquipedalian to actually name, so I won't.
Oh, okay. Well done. Now that was one several years back now. Yeah, it's been 5 years now. I guess 2018 I took mm-hmm. part in an exhibit and performance in North Dakota. Yeah. And it was called the painter to painter exhibit. And what the idea was is that a poet was given mm-hmm. a painting by an artist, writes a poem about that painting, then sends the poem to another painter who hasn't seen the first one, and And it's interesting because I took part on both ends. I painted pictures and I wrote poems. And most of our the poetry examples, mine included, were pretty literal, so that there wasn't the huge diversity between the paintings that you were kind of hoping for, because we, as not only were the paintings realistic, the poems were basically very realistic and very literal when it comes to the images, so that the image that grew out of the second image that grew out of the poem wasn't jarringly different from the first image.
Imitative.
Yeah, it we were, and we've never, we haven't brought that one back yet. Of course, not the festival only took place one more year before the 3 years of the pandemic, and they're just getting back on their feet this year. They may bring that back. It's an interesting exercise.
It is. You know, I really like the idea of being told by anybody, David, go and sit over there and write a poem.
Yeah.
About what? Well, they give you XYZ. Okay, I'll do that. And generally, it's a lot more fun than having to dredge it out of your own inspiration or intuition or what have you, it comes from.
It's the prompts, the picture prompts. Another one that I've run into is a word. You know, the word for the day is grudge. Write a poem with the word grudge in it. Okay.
Right.
And if you can use those prompts to sharpen your skills, in the manner of rhyme, meter, form, whatever, even if it comes out total drivel, if it's well-structured drivel, you have succeeded. A friend of mine, the late, great cowboy poet from Buckley, Washington, Michael Whitaker, used to get up before going to work every day and write a poem. And they were beautiful. They were marvelously structured. The meter, the rhyme were spot on. It was great. And then you realize that much of what you're reading was just garbage. He was just sort of spewing about, you know. But he was doing it in a way that sharpened his technical skills. So he was actually working every morning before going to work, writing these poems. So when he had material that he wanted to impart, he was capable, and he could do it in a technically accepted and sharp way, which is something I am still working on. Dutchie is a pretty well-structured poem. It's not perfect, but the meter and rhyme are not bad.
No, it's good storytelling.
Right? Yeah. And that's my primary interest, is telling the story. I mentioned to you my earliest forms of poetry were something I called random interval rhyming prose, which was just a rename. I just renamed something that we always used to call bad poetry, but I found that unnecessarily judgmental, so I thought I'd rename it random interval rhyming prose. And that was some of the stuff that cowboy poetry is a fairly structured form. If I wish to enter contests, I must pay specific attention to rhyme and meter. As a matter of fact, I think I'll keep him poem. I got dinged for a near rhyme from mayhem to him. Well, that's a near rhyme. You can't use that.
Oh, it's going to be like, straight on.
Excuse me, but I didn't say mayhem. I said mayhem, which the way I pronounce it, it rhymes with him, you know. But I didn't argue with anybody. I don't argue with people.
You said that with a smile, didn't you?
You bet.
And then went on chewing your chore right after.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
Boy, that's
because it's for contests. Wow. You need to pay attention to stuff like that, which is one of the reasons I've lost a lot of cowboy poetry contests.
Well, we don't know the judges.
But what I was talking about being an award losing cowboy poet, I'm actually very proud of that because I have lost awards to some of the best cowboy poets in the country, and I mean that literally. I'm not being funny.
No,
or
humble
modest.
Virtue is what I took from.
I have had the honor to work with and to stand next to on stage some of the best that we've got going right now, even though most people would never have heard of them.
Yeah, well, fine declaration. Not so many talk about the poets that read at poetry readings and give them such praise. Maybe that's something person should do once in a while.
Cowboy poetry is a subgenre of a subset of a sub-basement, you know. It's a particularly, we're lucky if we number our fans in the dozens, you know.
Oh, dozens.
That's
good.
Some of us would be very happy with that number.
So
to
are
be honest
20 people or 10 at any poetry reading?
We were setting up at a library in Steamboat Springs, Colorado for a show. And one of the other performers the performers are putting the chairs out and, you know, getting everything ready. And one of the other performers says, yeah, put out lots of empty chairs. That's what I'm used to. And it's very true. I have a video of me doing Dance With Me, Mister, to a dog in an empty room. And to make it worse, he leaves before I'm done.
Terrible.
It was a lot of fun, actually. Yes, well, I got some good videos out of that day, but nobody came, literally.
His master's voice.
You know, yeah. He was actually sort of he was still acclimating, so he wasn't as social as you might have wanted. So it was nice of him to sit and listen for as long as he did. Thank you, buddy.
Dogs be rewarded.
Yes,
and
all means.
Here's a treat coming up. You said cowboy poetry is sort of sub-proper at times. The sub-properness is sometimes what we're after of the poem. This is joy. This is for your pleasure to enjoy.
El Fandango de las Manzanas, or The Apple Dance. There's a story that's told about a vaquero of old, smitten by a certain Chiquita, figured his skill with a horse, his best feature, of course, had won the heart of this señorita. Now, them's that could ride, sat their saddles with pride, numbered about a dime a dozen, so it was his skill on the ground, with a young colt he'd found, the manner in which he'd chosen. Picked out a place, a suitable space, to show off his considerable ability, and a time it was set when you could just bet that she'd be in the vicinity. On that fateful day he arrived, full array, gleaming from boots to sombrero, his shirt freshly boiled, pantalones unsoiled, a truly impressive vaquero. She saw right away that handsome display, climbed up to watch on the fence. His riata streaked out, flew true with no doubt, and that's when the dancing commenced. Planned to show this hoss just who here was boss, but that caballo had a mind of his own. He balked, he kicked, he pulled back a lick, showed his belly where the morning sun shone, and with every lunge and hop, a fresh apple he'd drop. Enough to fertilize half of Visalia, so with each heave and hoe, he had to sort of tiptoe to keep from ruining his fancy regalia. Now, you can probably guess this ends in a mess when his foot finally finds a fresh pie, splatters here to there from boots to hair, some even got in his eye. It's difficult to do when you're covered in poo, to maintain a sense of dignity, but he finished that dance in soiled boots, shirt, and pants, till that colt showed signs of civility. Now, despite the mishaps, or because of, perhaps. Those two went and fell in love, and to this day they stand on a little piece of land together like hand in glove. Oh, and he still works the ground, but these days he's found in old boots pulled outside his pants. And she smiles so wide at those pants tucked inside, remembering that first apple dance.
I hope that you've all paid attention to the beauty and the good mock of being a cowboy living the life. And Lynn Kopelke, I can't thank you enough. It was a real pleasure to hear them.
Oh, my pleasure, David. I really appreciate this. I was happy to be here.
This is Sound Poetry. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Lynn Kopelke.